Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where today we're asking, can you build a cultural quarter? We're pegging this one on the opening of the Louvre Abu Dhabi. The world's largest museum, located in Paris, of course, has expanded to the Middle East, on Saadiyat Island, the new home of arts and culture in the UAE. Designed by the French architect Jean Nouvel, the museum consists of 55 low-rise buildings in the style of a medina, topped by a lattice dome roof that stretches across the lot. The roof offers shade in the style of the dappled light afforded by the palms at the oasis of El Ain. It feels like a cool, calm place. A funky cold medina is what you shouldn't call it, but we have. Inside the buildings, of course, it's freezing. Good old Abu Dhabi aircon meets the chilly rigour of art storage. Let's begin, though, with a report from the site itself, Saadiyat Island. This new home of the Louvre is a purpose-built cultural project just off the shores of Abu Dhabi, where we'll soon see more major museum openings like the Guggenheim and the Zayed National Museum, or so they say. But can you just plonk culture down wherever you please and hope that it blossoms? Razan Alzayani is a co-founder of Koenig Cultures, a Middle East podcast, and brings us this report.
As recently as 15 years ago, I would spend many weekends on Saadiyat Island. We would load our camping bags onto a friend's boat and would spend the day sitting around a bonfire, barbecuing, hanging out by the mangroves, and swimming around the island's serene waters. So much has changed in recent years. The island, as it was then, is barely recognizable now. With hotels and luxury residences built up along the coast and a major highway connecting the island to mainland Abu Dhabi.
I guess it's going to be the next exit, which is Saadiyat Beach West. And then we're going to take the next right. So in a row, it's Park Hyatt, Rixos, Rotana, another one here. And then the St. Regis, which is absolutely massive. With the golf course.
Saadiyat is destined to be a luxury island, offering world-class culture, education, residence, and leisure as part of Vision 2030, Abu Dhabi's strategic plan to diversify its economy away from oil. It's a triangular-shaped island, roughly 25 square kilometers and only 500 meters from the capital, with an ambitious master plan announced in 2006, complete with the branding of world-class architects and museums. The initial plan has four museums: the Guggenheim by Frank Gehry, the Louvre by Jean Nouvel, the Performing Arts Center by Zaha Hadid, and a maritime museum by Japanese architect Tadao Ando. To understand Abu Dhabi's unique policy to build and develop a global cultural hub from square one, we spoke to Yasser Ashishtawi, who was an associate professor of architecture at UAE University for the past 20 years.
You have this very big, large, beautiful island 500 meters away from the main city itself. The sense was, why not? And clearly, the island is not envisioned completely in terms of culture. There are various housing projects, gated communities, real estate developments. So a cultural district would add value to these developments and would help selling real estate units, basically.
The decision to construct a cultural district outside of mainland Abu Dhabi was intentional.
There were these practical reasons for building this cultural quarter or these museums on the island. But there are also reasons related to how the city sees culture itself. And I guess the sense was that it would be better served if it's a little bit separated in a place on its own, where all these various Western art forms can be displayed without directly interfering with the daily affairs of the city, which is, I think, sort of a flawed view of looking at things and very unfortunate. I think it would have been much better if these museums would have been actually built within the city itself.
It's not just the policy of creating a cultural center outside of Abu Dhabi city that mattered, but it was also a deliberate strategic policy from the ruling family to choose world-class museums like the Louvre and the Guggenheim in order to expose the population to Western culture and the arts.
First, in terms of why these cultural centers, right? I mean, clearly economics plays a role in that, but it's not the only one. And they have been quite forthcoming about that. The other reason is that they want younger generations in the UAE to be exposed to Western culture. And they are looking at that as a way to combat fundamentalism and trends that sort of focus more on history and things like that. So they wanted the youth in the UAE particularly to be exposed to these ideas, to Western ideology. And it was felt that by bringing in these world-class museums like the Guggenheim, the Louvre, and the British Museum, people in the UAE would be exposed to modernity in a way. It's very controversial because if you look at Western art forms, and nudity is a big part of that. And that always comes up, any discussion about the museum, what about nudity? And that for some reason is on everybody's mind, you know. And it's very interesting because the UAE is quite liberal in that regard. The rulers are not particularly hung up on any notions of censorship or preventing this, but they are conscious that they are really located between two superpowers. You have Saudi Arabia on one side, Iran on the other, and both are very conservative. And there are people in the UAE who just wouldn't be comfortable looking at a nude painting. So it's dealt with in all manners. The region is perceived as being some sort of cultural backwater, and that there is no culture there, and that these museums do not really serve a particular purpose aside from being a commercial enterprise. In many ways, I think it's sort of a misguided notion, and it goes back to a sense of Western supremacy and looking down at the region in general, that it's not worthy of having these sort of cultural, you know, centers. But it clearly is a misguided notion, because if you look at the Louvre, for example, a lot of its what it displays is actually taken from the region. The other part is that there is a fear that Western art will be compromised because of censorship, and that these museums, or by being located in such conservative regions, that this will somehow compromise the tradition of liberal art and experimentation and so on. So it still remains to be seen how this will play out. And the official rhetoric is that cultural norms will be respected, but there will be no censorship, etc., etc. But there are limitations, clearly. And that's really controversial, because will the Guggenheim allow itself to be censored? Will the Louvre allow itself to be censored?
It's been over 10 years since the initial plan was revealed, and development on Saadiyat Island's cultural district has slowed down, leaving many projects on hold.
First of all, only one building actually has been built. The Louvre. The Guggenheim hasn't even started yet, and the other ones have been shelved. The Zaha Hadid building probably will never be built. The Tadao Andu, nobody talks about that. The Sheikh Zayed Museum, the plans are there, and it has been assigned to Norman Foster, but again, the starting date for that is unclear. But at the moment, all that we have is a Louvre Museum, a bunch of five-star hotels, an exclusive world-class university. All of these are isolated entities. They are not connected to each other. Driving through Saadiyat Island right now, you don't really see much except billboards promising the good life. It is a very exclusive environment. It is an environment that is meant, or it can only be utilized or is geared towards tourists, wealthy people who are able to afford the prices of either purchasing real estate or staying in hotels there. So I think that runs counter to the initial vision of the UAE.
The dome is Jean Nouvel's signature design and was inspired by the play of light piercing through palm fronds. Nouvel designed the exterior cladding in a traditional Arab mashrabiya pattern, with geometric shapes and lines interweaving into each other, creating what has been famously coined as a ray of light.
The museum itself is sort of isolated. It's actually not even located on the island itself. The museum is an island. It has been built into the sea. That was intentional. I participated in a symposium once with Jean Nouvel, and he talked at length about this beautiful idea of building this museum in the water, and the Guggenheim is the same, also in the water. So you're already on an island away from the city, and then you're further building outside in the water. I mean, what's the point of that? It's hard to see the thinking here, but I think it probably was sort of motivated or spurred or encouraged by the stakeholders, the rulers of the city, because they wanted to have this very precious object that you see from Abu Dhabi, And you can imagine this beautiful domed museum seen from a distance in the middle of the water, reflecting on the water. I mean, that image is, I think, very powerful. But then when you actually go see the museum, and I was there 2 years ago while it was under construction, they took us on a visit. And it really takes a while to actually get to the entrance. You have to go in, you park your car. It's a massive distance from the parking area to the actual entrance. And I don't think you'll be able to walk. You will actually have to take some sort of electric bus or something, or transportation to take you. So it's all these different layers and these different, you know, steps to actually enter into the building. It's so far removed.
Building the cultural district has not come without its controversies, with allegations from human rights groups and boycotts from artists claiming labor abuses on the island.
The UAE clearly is very sensitive to these issues and is very aware of them. And when they were raised, various committees were set up and investigations were launched and reports commissioned to look into these abuses and to look into ways of mitigating them and somehow dealing with them. These reports are commissioned, recommendations are given, and supposedly these issues are addressed, which at the face of it looks fine, right? But then there are a lot of things happening that are not under the immediate control of the government. It is a culture that where dealing with laborers in a humane way is not particularly something that is deeply ingrained. It's something that government and various stakeholders are aware of, and they're trying to deal with it in some way. Whether they're doing enough or not, that's a different question. But they are aware of it, and it's clearly in their interest to resolve these issues and put them to rest. But the potential is there for making something that is accessible to everybody. But it still remains to be seen whether that will actually happen or not. It's still work in progress. How do you integrate Saadiyat with the rest of Abu Dhabi? Or otherwise you'll just have this isolated place that only a few will care to go to.
It's a lazy Saturday afternoon on Saadiyat. There are some beachgoers that brave the 42-degree heat. And on the opposite side of the island, at Minarat Saadiyat, the first gallery space to actually open on the island, I've just happened to walk into a free screening of African Queen, a 1950s British adventure film, and it's absolutely packed with an audience. And outside one of the exhibition halls are six crates filled with artwork from the Guggenheim's Abu Dhabi collection. Despite the isolated enclave that Saadiyat may become, there exists a demographic already engaging with cultural events on the island, paving the way from a high-end luxury lifestyle towards perhaps a growing appreciation for art and culture. For Monocle in Abu Dhabi, I'm Razana Zayani.
Thanks to Razan Alzanyani for that report. And to hear it in full, head to episode 188 of The Foreign Desk, where it first aired. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I had the pleasure of seeing the new Louvre Abu Dhabi for myself, as did Gareth Harris, chief contributing editor of the Art newspaper, who joins me now in the studio. Gareth, welcome to the programme.
Hello.
Nice to have you back in the culture show bosom. It's been a while.
Thank you for having me.
We've done up the studio in your honour.
Oh, good. A few more red lights.
A few more red lights, exactly. A bit more Christmas glamour going on. Now, this was a kind of well-stocked programme of events in Abu Dhabi that week. It was Abu Dhabi Art Fair, which I think sort of upped its game next to the opening of the Louvre Abu Dhabi. So a busy week. The Louvre Abu Dhabi itself, let's take it in two bites. Let's talk about the building and then what's inside of it. You interviewed Jean Nouvel, the architect, who did a lot of talking that week. You got some good stuff out of him nonetheless. First things first, what do you think of the Louvre Abu Dhabi, the building?
Well, I think it's spectacular, really. I think the founding editor of the art newspaper, Anna Summers Cox, called it the next wonder of the world. And it does live up to that description. When you enter the dome, it's quite spectacular to see this kind of so-called rain of light coming through the stars of the interlaced latticed roof. And it does work. I mean, there is a real wow factor.
There's something quite organic about that, isn't there? That it also about the scale of it. It's sort of based on a medina, an Arabic sort of town, village, rather than being a 90-foot-high skyscraper. Quite refreshing.
Exactly. I mean, the dome caps, I think, 55 individual buildings. So Jean Nouvel keeps emphasising that he really wants to, you know, he really worked on this concept of it as a city on the sea. And it does work. And he talked about the sort of water lapping at the sides, the Venetian aspects of the design. So, yeah, it's quite unique in that obviously you have to sort of walk inside and outside under this incredible lattice dome. So it is spectacular. I mean, the only thing I would say is I thought the entrance was a little underwhelming from the car park side.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. It is that funny thing. And so many of these grand projets are all about joined up thinking. And as much as you get a big name architect and a superstar architect to do the big thinking of these things, people still have to get there. And I kind of wondered about that. And I wondered how happy he himself probably was with the fact that the palm trees looked like they'd sort of been shipped in a couple of days previously. Do you know what I mean? There was a funny lack of, I suppose, red carpet, at least on the day that you and I went, Gareth.
Yeah, there was. I mean, he also spoke at the press conference about his initial plan, and he said that he wanted to build a garden at the entrance. I don't think that hasn't happened. We have the car park. He said...
Car garden.
He did say that the garden should appear in a few years, but it was dependent on funding. So I don't think everything quite went to plan. But, as you say, joined up thinking, perhaps not always so joined up. And that sort of walkway in was slightly underwhelming, a bit disappointing. I mean, I'm sure it's very different if you come in from the sea. There's a sea entrance, I think.
That's spectacular. Right? Now, I think I've gone to the Museum of Islamic Art in Doha that way, the Ayanpei building, which is a beautiful building. And I was lucky enough to go to that on a boat. Mm. And that's quite an epic sort of way to enter that museum. And I feel this one might have been the same. You have a great sense of kind of docking rather than just turning up and waiting your line in queue. So the outside is a beautiful thing, as we say. I mean, just before we enter the museum itself, Gareth, what did you think of the sort of scale of it? The fact that these 55 buildings are quite spread out under this lattice dome. I think the idea was to give the effect of the dappled shade under the palm trees of El Ain, the oasis up north of the country. What did you think about the general kind of feeling of being under that dome?
I thought it was quite amazing, actually, to be in that sort of atmosphere. Mm. And it was quite easy to navigate around the different galleries. I'm not sure if there'll be a cap on visitor numbers, but it certainly seemed quite easy to navigate. I thought some of those installations in that outside part were excellent by Giuseppe Pennoni and Jenny Holzer.
Yeah, I love those two pieces.
Yeah, they're real star pieces, and I think that all adds to the wow factor. I thought Jenny Holzer's piece was fantastic. She's carved, I think, three stone pieces from... using text from a 16th century essay by Michel de Montaigne. I mean, this is all quite grand stuff, but it does work. So, yeah, I think it looked fantastic. And I love the way the galleries are discreet. You know, you enter them separately as separate units. And they do tell a clear story. I think you want to talk about the collection in a second.
Yeah, should we enter the...
Yeah.
Should we go inside? We should warn listeners thinking of catching their plane to Abu Dhabi that they should take not with them, not just shorts for everything other than the Louvre, but maybe a decent thick puffer jacket and a cashmere scarf for wandering around the Louvre's not unimpressive collection. It's so cold in there. I mean, this is kind of where...
The conditioning's bad.
Isn't it?
It is cold, but isn't that always the problem with... the kind of Gulf States.
Maybe it's just me kind of thinking, I know, I'll need to bring a jacket for this, clearly, because you want to be vaguely smart. You want to cover your arms.
You're going to take your puffer jacket next time, then.
But yeah, I'm going full winter. A lot has been made of the juxtaposition of things. We go from the beginning of sort of time right up to 20th century modern and contemporary art. There are a few key things of loans from the Louvre, and there are some key things that the Louvre Abu Dhabi itself has bought. What do you think of the general kind of outlay, the style in which things have been laid out to draw attention to the similarities, I suppose, of a lot of what was going on in the world of art at similar points in time?
It is interesting. I mean, the Louvre officials made a lot of the fact that this is the first universal museum in the Arab world. And at the press conference again, Jean-Luc Martinez, who's the Louvre director, really stressed that this is the first museological display which makes connections between seemingly disparate civilizations. I suppose that is revolutionary. People I spoke to at the press conference liked that approach. They think it worked. I spoke to a Beirut collector called Basel Dalloul, who said that the cross-culture approach was really successful. If you look at things in a linear way, you tend to miss out, he said, which I thought was really interesting.
Interesting from that someone from that part of the world having that perspective rather than always us guys saying
exactly. Yeah. And I suppose this kind of Western view of splitting up things into different civilizations and periods, perhaps that does look a little bit staid now. I'm not sure. It does certainly gives us a new take on things. And Jean-Luc Martinez has said previously that you now cannot look at sort of European painting or Western art as a single entity. With this new kind of display, you have to link it to things like, you know, Indian painting or Chinese sculpture. So it does bring things together in a new way. Some people at the opening were a little bit moany. They grumbled a little bit. They said, will the man on the street really understand and absorb this new approach? And I think they will, actually. I mean, I'm quite convinced. So you had some brilliant juxtapositions, I thought, you know, between, I think there was a sort of selection of three heads, a Nok Nigerian one, yeah. a Mayan vase in the form of a face. I thought some things looked pretty outstanding, actually. I don't know what you thought, but they did work for me.
I thought there was some wonderful. I thought the presentation also was beautiful. Mm. The lighting, all the vitrines and cases. As I think you spoke to Jean Nouvel about, everything has been made specifically for that one museum, that one room of that one museum, specific dimensions, the lighting network and all the rest of it. So it's kind of a great work of engineering in itself just to have those things looking the way they do, as they will look nowhere else, which is a wonderful thing. And I did like some of the juxtapositions. And, you can easily lose yourself in that kind of art historical learning. It's kind of nice to know what was going on. I think there was a wonderful sculpture from Gabon in the same room as Whistler's mother,
exactly.
A self-portrait by Van Gogh and all these sorts of things. So I thought that was wonderful to know what the thinking was in different parts of the world at the same point in time. I thought that was quite a refreshing thing.
It is.
I wonder
refreshing.
If it would be taken up by different museums. I think that's the test.
Exactly, and I don't know if the Louvre intends to take this approach elsewhere. Perhaps they'll reproduce the Louvre Abu Dhabi model elsewhere in the world. I don't know. There have been rumours about that. Seems to make perfect sense to me. I think they have 550,000 objects in storage and they have loaned 100 works for this as part of the deal with the French government. So they would be onto a winner if they decided to replicate this model, I think, financially, culturally, on a curatorial front. I think it all works for them. I do. I do think the display was a little bit disappointing towards the end. It petered out in the modern and contemporary.
A bit of box ticking there.
Yeah, there was a lot of box ticking. I mean, the Ai Weiwei Fountain of Lights piece looks very impressive, but I'm not quite sure why it was there. I'm not sure what its purpose was. And there were some strange choices. There was, I think, a piece by Lionel Walden called Cardiff Docks. I'm from Cardiff, so I was really happy.
I was surprised to see that in that room. This is the one with that wonderful
Cezanne.
Sort of sculpture from Gabon,
yeah.
and the Cezanne, the Van Gogh,
yeah.
etc. Yeah.
So strange choices at certain points, but I suppose, you know, the fact that those things took me aback was also quite refreshing. Now they've started along this road of building up the first Universal Museum. They obviously have to continue in that vein. Mm. So I'll be interested to see what the next raft of acquisitions will be. They have been busy in the last 5 years. And how this all slots into the general cultural strategy of Abu Dhabi's governmental policy will be interesting. I mean, Saadiyat Island's looking a little bit.
And Saadiyat itself, right? Because this is the only finished thing on Saadiyat Island, which is mooted to have a Guggenheim. What's the status update on those?
Well, it's interesting because at the moment, there's apparently no progress on the Guggenheim, although they do say it's going to happen. I interviewed Mohammed Khalifa Al Mubarak when I was in Abu Dhabi. He's the chairman of the Abu Dhabi Tourism and Cultural
Authority. He's a charming and bullish character, isn't he?
He is charming. I thought he was very informative and charismatic.
Yeah.
And I said to him, what's going to happen to the other museums? Because this is slightly controversial. The art newspapers reported that the British Museum has pulled out of the deal with the Sheikh Zayed National Museum. I think it was a 10-year contract. They've pulled out 2 years early. So I said to him, are these museums still going to happen? And he was bullish. He said, the other museums planned for the Saadiyat Cultural District are still due to go ahead, even though the British Museum has terminated its 10-year cooperation deal. And surprisingly, he said to me that building work will start on the Zayed National Museum by the end of this year. So I thought that was quite an interesting nugget, actually, that these things are moving ahead.
Yeah.
Question mark possibly over the Guggenheim. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, as we were saying, it's not just about the Louvre, it's about a cultural strategy with joined up thinking. And he said, you know, he can guarantee it won't take 10 years to build those other museums, hinting at the delay with the Louvre. The Louvre was initially scheduled to open 2012-13. So they are conscious of this kind of schedule and what needs to be done. But it will need to be a cultural package. I don't think there's enough on Sadiat yet to draw possibly international visitors. I'm not sure. He said he thinks people will travel from Dubai. I'm skeptical about that.
Really?
I don't know how you...
Even that far?
He said, you know, they will make that 1 hour drive. And I thought, okay, possibly. We'll see.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, as you may be alluding to, Gareth, that it needs a little bit more of the completion of Sadiat to make it a complete draw. You need certainly the British Museum or the Sheikh Zayed Museum with its British Museum influence, however that might pan out. Even if it doesn't, or the Guggenheim, or all three of those things together, I wonder whether that is the kind of lure that drags you into one and all, I suppose.
Yeah, if you're going to rebrand an entire state as a cultural destination, I think you need more on the menu, to be honest. But we'll see what happens. I mean, they're very determined. They have made the Louvre happen. I think Zayed National Museum will go ahead. Guggenheim, we'll have to wait and see.
Just finally and personally, I remember going to, I think it was the sort of the day that ground was broken on this project, or it was the day the bridge was completed. It was some trip that happened out there. It felt surreal in a good way, actually, to be walking around that thing, looking at a Leonardo on the wall and some of these sort of, you know, wonderful pieces of sort of 19th century French and well, European art as well. I felt good for them, actually, that it was done, not without huge amounts of money and a huge amount of stomach-churning project management, I'm sure. But what was what was the hit for you of that trip and of the Louvre itself?
I think you're right. After writing about this for 10, 11 years since the intergovernmental agreement was signed in 2007, to finally see it was... Yeah, you know, I was totally taken aback. And I think walking in and then seeing the Leonardo piece, La Belle Ferronnière, to see it there, I did think this is fantastic. You know, people can wake up on a Saturday morning and think, we now have a world-class museum we can visit. I think that's fantastic for local visitors, for Emiratis. I mean, there is an admission charge, which is 60 Emirati dirham, I think, which is about £12. I'm surprised there's an admission fee. You know, I thought for the first year or so that it would be free, just to get that word of mouth thing. But I still think it's a fantastic achievement. As you say, those wow factors, what were they? I think it was seeing the Leonardo. Mm. I think it was walking in under Jean Nouvel's dome and seeing the Pannoni and the Holzer. So I'm glad it exists and I'm glad it's happened. So let's see what happens next on Sadiat Island.
Exactly. Exactly. You might be invited to bring your own trowel next time, Gareth, possibly.
Exactly. And a puffer jacket.
And a puffer jacket, of course. I'm Gareth Harris. Thank you very much indeed. Gareth is the Chief Contributing Editor at the Art Newspaper. Thank you. The show was produced by Holly Fisher and we'll be back at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound and thank you very much for tuning in.